remember, the things you see might not quite be your own reality. But the message exists within the inner, and then you know that you just doesn't get it. Because life just starts, and when it ends, it turns around, and
this is Alan Steinfeld and New Realities, and that was just Duke Williams and the Extremes, who is actually singing about his own encounters with UFOs, and we're going to be picking up the conversation where we left off last week with Sean and Clay Pickering, and they've been talking about a government informant, or an informant that has been talking to them about the coming disclosure. Well, anyway, Sean, why don't you pick up and recap what we talked about last week, and we'll take it to the next step, okay?
Last week we discussed how Clay and I had met an individual connected to a branch of service who actually interfaced with three particular ET races, one of which was is a silicon-based life form ET, another is a reptilian, and another is a tall white. He's part of a program connected to a contact scenario that was presented to him through the interface with these ETs. The contact scenario dictates that this particular silicon-based life form will appear in 2017 over various cities. I don't say selected because we have no idea at this point whether or not there's a selection process ongoing. Our source, we call him Source A, was part of a UN meeting that took place February 12, 2008. He was assigned to explore the possibility of getting some of this information out to nation states, giving it to a branch, a level within the pyramid, we call it, pyramid of control, high, mid-level bureaucratic people that get things done. Their task was to take the information, pass it on, work with it, and then eventually pass on their results to the diplomatic corps, and from the diplomatic corps, it is to go to nation-state representatives. And at that point, they would decide exactly how to go about disclosure, that is, the human process of disclosing the presence of ETs on our planet prior to the contact date of 2017. I want to reiterate to our listeners that there's a difference between disclosure and contact.
Right.
Disclosure is a human process. It concerns only human beings. The ETs are not concerned with disclosure, only humans. And they're disclosing that information which has been covered up for some 60 years. So the ETs do not concern themselves. This is our game in terms of disclosure. They're only concerned with the physical manifestation of contact. They've dictated a date of 2017. On that date, they'll appear over various cities, and they'll stay for a period of time to ensure that it is unambiguous, that people see them, and that there is absolutely no denial. Did you want to offer something, Clay?
No, keep going. Keep going.
At that point, based on our reaction to this particular ET race, sitting over various cities, and we don't know the cities, they will decide whether or not they're going to stay or whether they're going to leave. Mm-hmm. If they leave, it's because the planet, the people on the planet, simply reject or cannot handle the presence of ETs. And essentially, at the end of the day, they'll say, see you later, boys. We'll see you in another 200-plus years or whatever time frame that they chose. And we'll have to wait and see them at a later date. If we embrace it, then it'll be a matter at that point whether or not we, as a human species, do certain things that will allow the particular ET race to seed technology to us to help us stabilize and move towards a more healthy, stabilized population. That's issue we'll be discussing, the post contact scenario, what's going to happen if they do in fact stay.
Okay. Now, just to back up, or just to reiterate, where are we in this process of talking to diplomats and nation states? Where's that at right now?
Okay, that's very difficult to say because our guy, our contact, is no longer assigned to that specific program. That is a completely different program. The person that succeeded him is handling it. We don't know who that person is. Our source, he's told us, our source has told us that he does not know who this person is. He may know who the person is, but he simply hasn't conveyed it to us. We've asked, he says he doesn't know. Now, he may know, he can't tell us, or he actually does not know. But at the end of the day, this particular person that succeeded our guy is, at this point, hammering out the details of what needs to be done to facilitate disclosure. Mm-hmm. Because the overall, overarching objective to disclosure is to do it in such a way where, A, people that have committed crimes over the last 60 years get immunity. I'm sure that...
Crimes such as covering up this huge government... secret, actually. That's the crime.
Yeah, I mean, it is believed that, that certain people have been killed over this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
People that had very sensitive information, they've been eliminated. They've been what they call liquidated. That would be the immunity against prosecution of murder. People that have lost their job, people in the aerospace industry that have leaked out information. People that have been prosecuted for revealing secrets,
right.
You know, they have paid the penalty of being, as they say, whistleblowers.
Keep in mind, too, this is Clay Allen. Keep in mind, too, that when you deal with amnesty or immunity, you're dealing with every single government organization that we can even imagine involved in the space industry or involved in high technology that deals with this issue. So, for instance, NASA. Can you imagine NASA and the people who are aware of the phenomena, who may have had the information classified that they cannot come out and say, or those who have said and have suffered the repercussions from this? So, I mean, we can just imagine the lawsuits that would take effect if, in fact, there was litigation.
And also the loss of goodwill on the part of the government itself. The government comes out, elements of the government that come out, we'll call them the military-industrial complex, these people that run in between transnational corporations and government that know about the phenomenon, they're going to have to come out and say, yeah, we've known about it for 60 years. And the public is going to say, well, why didn't you tell us?
It's just to reinforce that point, Alan, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who was the equivalent to our Defense Secretary in Canada, labeled it two forms of government. The permanent government, which is the second and third tier of corporate officials who revolve between government and corporations, and our elected government, which the government... is elected by the people, but they're not permanent. That's the revolving door of the people who are not in the know.
Okay, so let me ask you, what happened to your informant? Who is he working for now, and is it related to this area?
He is technically in the status of he's active but not actually assigned to anything.
Okay, just wondering
so
if you had more information.
So technically, he would be technically AWOL.
AWOL.
Alan, this might help. Sean, you may want to mention, without getting into any names, your friend who challenged you about our guy's status in relation to his status.
Well,
this might help. This might help.
I have a friend who's been part of the Army in the status of being active but not actually serving. Mm-hmm. And I said to my friend that our guy is in reserve, he's now non-active. He goes, bull, you know, if you say he's doing what he's doing, you know, then he is still active. I said, so what you're saying is he's essentially AWOL. And he said, exactly. And our source has said to us that that's kind of this murky area he's in, Because what it is they once they deactivate you, then you have to go through the whole process, bureaucratic process of getting reactivated. So what they do is they kind of put you in this sleeper, I hate to use that term, this non-active mode where when the opportunity comes up, when the need for you to be engaged in a particular program comes to be, then you just simply appear. There's no paperwork necessary.
So keep in mind,
our guy
tried to resign his commission in the mid to late 80s, and he was not allowed. So essentially, he got quite annoyed about it and said, okay, see ya. But when he said see ya, he could not say see ya on paper. He may have said, see ya, I'm going to do my thing and go somewhere else.
All right, then let's talk about the conformers, but also because your guy is sort of AWOL, you're not getting any new information, right?
Correct. He's not AWOL on paper. He's AWOL.
Right. But because he's not in the program anymore, your source has kind of hit a dead end.
Our source has only hit a dead end, as far as we know, with the UN information. In other words, he is not part of those meetings now, which is something we knew that was going to happen even when we first were aware that our source was a part of it, and he knew it too. So the point being is that he knew that this was going to be handed off at some point. However, that was expedited because our source was brought into another program, and this is the contact program with extraterrestrials. So he will not, in all likelihood, he will not be a part of any diplomatic dialogue between UN representatives or not. But I can't say that's a guarantee. There's always that prospect that he could be brought.
Your source is now in touch with what we're calling the conformers, this ET race that's going to be over our cities in 2017. Is that right?
If at the exact moment, he's not interfaced with them recently, but if the need arises, yes, he would be called in to interface.
Okay, so let's talk about the conformers. First, my first question, of course, and what someone who's listened to the program last week said, what are they waiting for? Why 2017? What has taken them so long? And, just explain that.
Well, That's an excellent question, and again, you have to kind of put on your inference hat here. I think the 2017 date was agreed upon with players either outside direct contact with our source, or a source has not told us who these players are, but I think there was an agreement that 2017 date would be far enough in the future whereby humans could initiate the disclosure process, get it going, so that when the contact date actually happens, there won't be chaos. So I think the 2017 date was an agreed date. Okay. I believe that the conformers probably said, we're going to appear, and then I think it was probably hashed out the date. Either that, or they've determined the date, they being the conformers, have determined the date. For whatever reasons, they have decided it's 2017. So take your pick. I don't know the answer.
Okay, so you said the conformers are sort of, let's say, over the reptilians and the tall whites, but they don't have anything to do with the grays. But I heard that the grays are actually working with the reptilians. I know it gets a little complicated.
Well, the thing that this is the problem with this whole ET mess is that we only know what we know within this program. Let me say it again. Mm-hmm. We only know what we know within this program. The tall whites and the reptilians tend to defer to the conformers. This is something our source has said when he puts his military hat on and has observed the situation through interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, I believe that the reptilians and the tall whites probably defer to this particular species, hence why we have never heard or have seen these particular ETs in the history of ufology. We don't know. This is another tier our source believes that we're working with. Now, this is his military hat when he puts this on. This is what he speculated. Now, with the grays, with our source, with this particular program, the reptilians loathe them. The conformers appear not to have or not willing to interject or impede what the Greys are doing. They may not approve. This is, again, our sources' military hat is on. It appears the conformers do not approve what the Greys are doing. But what we do understand is that there are separate agendas. There are agendas within agendas, programs within programs, and not just below, as above, so below. So we can infer that even with ETs is that there's a multiple number of programs and they don't always work with each other.
From what our source viewed, it seemed like the conformers are running the show.
Okay.
It seems. It appears to be.
Okay.
Now, let me give you a human example. If ET were to come down to Earth for the first time and view our structure, they're going to see the Secretary General of the UN. And they're going to say, oh, well, he's the guy that leads everything. No. It was an agreement that humans made to appoint him Secretary General, and he will be she will be Secretary General for a period of time. So this is the same scenario with the ETs. We're not sure the decision process that took place whereby certain ETs defer to the conformers. We don't know that.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit more about the who and what the conformers are and their agenda. I think from what you said last week, they really care about the planet Earth and they care about humans. Is that true? They want us to evolve?
Well, let's keep this in mind, okay? We're using a human word called care.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
However, according to our source, they are an incredibly logical species. They're a Spock a thousand times over. So what it appears to our source, when he puts his military hat on, again, because the conformers do not talk. They do not convey emotion or feeling. You cannot read them. So when our source puts his military hat on, he gets a sense that these are highly evolved spiritual entities and that they understand the bioconnectivity of the Earth and how it relates not just to humans but to every living creature on this planet and how well-connected we are. They understand the interconnectedness to it.
They also understand how fragile human beings are in terms of their environment. They understand that we need lice, mosquitoes, we need bacteria to survive. They understand,
right.
It seems like they understand our biology very well, and since they understand our biology very well, they're concerned that if we don't, they are aware that if we don't protect our environment, this very evolving species they deem humans may not be here very long.
Mm-hmm.
They're very concerned about overpopulation. I asked our source once, I said, one of the reasons he thinks that the conformers had come to the U.S. and representatives of the United States is that they look at certain societies where they have a fairly stable population as a society that's fairly evolved, which means that they've reached their balance point. The U.S. population is fairly stable. So I think it could be just a simple logical choice that populations where it's overpopulated, they look at the overpopulated society as something less evolved.
Keep this in mind too, Al. This is a very old, in our time frame, human time frame, this is a very old species. So they probably have seen civilizations rise and fall. We can assume this, okay? We can assume this because, according to our source, the conformers are not from the solar system. Okay.
Uh-huh. They don't have a concept of a home.
Right. There is no concept of a home from what we gather.
They live on a ship, or where do they live?
I cannot name specifically at least a planet within our system or an asteroid or whatnot. But, yes,
they have a base on an orb in our solar system.
Right. But yes, you could say that they move about through the Milky Way, through interstellar means.
Oh, but they do have a temporary base somewhere in our solar system, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think temporary is a fair word to say.
Temporary would be.
I don't think that they intend to stay.
Temporary could mean 10,000, 20,000 years. Keep that in mind.
Right,
I mean,
right.
For us, that's like, holy
for them, it's temporary.
Yeah.
For
their concept of time is very different.
For us, it seems permanent.
But somewhere in our solar system, they are presently located, just
correct.
Observing our progress.
Correct.
And maybe listening
that's
to this
correct.
Conversation, right?
Doubtful.
Okay. But let's get back to this understanding. Okay, humans are connected to the planet, but is the planet itself part of a greater ecosphere of the solar system and the galaxy? Do they
absolutely.
Have that understanding, the conformity?
Absolutely.
I think so. I think someone, this is a gentleman from, and I like him, his name is Hamstrung, and I hope he's listening. You know, I really think that we're a big way station out here, and that you know, we're a big Walmart or a food mart, and I mean, this planet offers so much. So I think there's, and this is what we mean about agendas within agendas. For instance, the Greys may need biological material for whatever they need it for, human DNA. The Tall Whites may need resources from this planet, and they really don't want to interfere. They're willing to trade some technology in order to not to be interfered with. So we can guess that there's many different agendas.
But I think the overarching agenda for the conformers is that they're here to view the big event, and that is an extinction-level event that will happen on our planet probably within 2,000 to 10,000 years.
What do you mean, an extinction-level event? What is that about?
Our planet goes through extinction-level events every so often. Okay.
Where species die off? Is that what you're saying?
Well, hold on. Well, we mean this is important, okay? And I hope people at OMF are listening. ELE means that extinction-level event. It means life wiped off the planet. A punctuated catastrophe means just that. It's punctuated, but not all life is wiped out. That means including human life. So when the conformers talk about an ELE, they mean an ELE where everything is wiped out.
60 million years ago, and the story is that an asteroid came in to our solar system, hit the Yucatan Peninsula, and wiped out what was the dinosaur age.
Mm-hmm. But humans survived. I mean, there were humans.
I'm sorry?
In this next event that's coming from, you said, within the next 10,000 years?
We don't know when. Hold on.
2,000 to 10,000 years is a guesstimate at best.
Let's back up here real quick. This could happen 10 days from now, let's just say, okay? 10 days from now or 10,000 years. We don't know. It's not a question of if it happens. It's a question of when. Now, people may say, well, it's, you know, that's so far off. Not to the conformers. The conformers' concept of time is just, it's right around the corner. And from what we get from our source is that we need to prepare, people need to prepare, they need to be educated about the fact that we do have these ELEs, that we have a water shortage problem, that we have a population problem, and that there might be a way for the human race to survive.
Well, I think we're getting just a little ahead of ourselves, okay? Let's stop and let's examine the ELE event, okay?
Okay.
They are interested in us. They are amazed at our technological evolvement over the last 100 years. When an extinction-level event comes, they're afraid that after the extinction-level event happens, an intelligent species that evolves on our planet after the ELE may not be as innovative as humans are now.
In other words, are we, the humans, the best and the brightest that the planet has ever produced? And that's the big question. That's the big question.
They don't know. So the debate is whether or not to save us. When they say
they are here to save us if we can welcome them with, an openness. Is that?
No.
I want
to answer this one because I want to hammer OMF again.
Okay.
The openness is not the issue. The issue is that we must, besides taking care of the planet, we must must stabilize our population. We must take care of our ecological environment, and we must also, part of it is educating people about ELEs. Now, on population, I'll let Sean go in about the idea of what population means.
It's a logistical thing here. if they're going to save us, they're going to have to stick us in some space-based platform for a period of time when the planet goes through its ELE event and heals itself, okay?
Mm-hmm.
During that time, the conformers have to replicate before this, when they bring a sample of humanity up to this space-based platform.
Uh-huh.
They're going to have to replicate our environment because human beings are very, very, very reliant on our environment. They're going to have to bring up lice. They're going to have to bring up mosquitoes. They're going to have to bring up ants. They're going to have to bring up bacteria.
Lice.
Home Noah's Ark, right.
Lice, fleas.
A Noah's Ark, so to speak. Exactly.
We're fragile.
Now, here's the thing. This is where the population issue comes very, 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 becomes very, very important. In order to have a stable genetic sample that exists in a space-based platform over a period of time, it must be 2% of a population.
A total population.
That they can handle. Like, so say you have 100 people, your population is 100 people,
uh-huh.
And they can save 2 people, okay?
Let's say we have 10 billion people. What is that? They can only save 200 million or something? Or 100, or 100 million?
Well, here's the issue. In order for humanity to live in space, that sample has to be genetically stable. But it has to be a number that they can handle. They cannot save a million people. They can maybe save 500,000. Okay? Now, in order for the 500,000 person sample to be genetically stable, you have to organically bring down your total population. When the ELE event happens, they want to pluck a certain sample of humanity
before it happens.
They want to take a sample of humanity and bring it up to the space-based platform where they can live for a period of time, and then when the planet heals itself, they can bring humanity back. Okay?
I mean, so slow down. So are you saying 100 million, a million, 1,000? How many people are you saying they're going to lift off?
According to the conformers, what they can deal with is if they have a sample, 2% of the sample population have to be 2% of what, 1.5, 2 billion? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we take 2% of that, and that's what they can take because that genetic sample would be of a variety or a strain of 2 billion people, not 7 billion people or 9 billion people.
So it would be 2% of 1.5 billion would give you a genetically stable sample.
1.5 billion. Okay, so 2% of 1. Okay, so it's about 300,000, I think, if my math is right. Anyway,
well,
it's not very much.
Well, 10% would be 150 million.
Yeah.
And so 1% would be 1.5 million. So double that, about 3 million, I guess, if my math is right.
3 million people. They're going to take 3 million people out of the whole planet. And,
right.
Yeah.
But here's the trick.
Yeah.
The 2% of the genetically stable population has to be from a population that's been reduced to 1.5 million to ensure genetic stability in the sample. Got it?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
this is why they're fixated on population reduction. Because they can't help us with a population of 7 billion people.
But we have to stabilize and reduce on our own. They cannot do that.
Okay, but
we cannot do this. I don't want to digress here.
Sure.
What's not acceptable for the conformers, or we call it the ethical ETs, and for humans in general, is that we cannot reduce our population through the Malthusian policies of nuclear, chemical, biological, or any other means to reduce population. That is not acceptable.
Because what ends up happening is selective samples of the population get wiped out, others don't, and you don't have a genetically stable sample. Got it? It's got to be...
I get that. So it has to be a kind of volunteer next evolution of our own collective humanity.
Correct, and it has to be done over time.
Right. Now, when is this ELA? I mean, I know you don't know, but what will cause, if you said, if they're so certain it's coming, they must know what's going to cause this ELA.
Well, let me give you an example. Just recently, in talking with our guy, he said, hey, have you heard about the asteroid that came within 40,000 miles of the planet? And he said, what people don't realize is that they may have picked that up maybe 10 days before, but they may have not known exactly where its path was. They knew it was going to come close to Earth. But maybe they knew within 2 days that it was going to miss by 40,000. But let's just say that they knew it was going to hit the Earth. How, you know, we couldn't evacuate areas fast enough. It would create more confusion and problems and scare. It would have been logistically and tactically impossible to move that many people in that so short time. But the point is that particular asteroid would have caused a major, major tsunami had it hit in the ocean, and would have caused a catastrophe in a certain expanse of area if it hit land. So that is an example where that would have been a punctuated catastrophe, not an ELE. Now, something's far larger, such what Sean just mentioned earlier, then we have a problem.
Well, like, I'll give you an example. What's been offered is what they call mega volcanoes.
Yeah.
You have the mega volcano in the Yellowstone area. If that pops, that could be an extinction-level event.
Because it would create a nuclear winter.
So they don't know what it is that's going to happen. They just know something at some point.
I can't say that. We can't say that.
Oh.
All we can say is they haven't told us.
Oh, so they might know that we're on track for a meteor and nothing.
They might. They might not. I don't know. They do have a great respect for the planet, the planet's ability to heal itself, the planet's ability to create intelligent life. They're really, from what our guy gleans, they're really reticent about stepping into that process that nature starts and puts forth and continues.
Mm-hmm. They're more interested to see how nature evolves in its totality than to interfere with it.
Right.
Okay. And humans, of course, are a part of nature, and the genius of humanity is an aspect of the creative force of nature.
The whole Gaia concept, the whole systems theory concept of how our ecology works, they're not going to step in and monkey with that.
Right. Okay.
Because our system is our system. It produces a certain type of life, and they let that go.
But it's like this too, Alan, is that can we not, as intelligent sentient beings in the cosmos, grab hold of our future, and in the spirit of humankind, be able to protect all life on this planet and life, our life, and to move forward in its technological phase so that we evolve and so that we may also become a spacefaring. We earn that rite of passage. So there is, I don't like to use the word, but I guess there is a Darwinian aspect to this, at least in terms of biological, spiritual life evolving. And I think the conformers have went through this process in other civilizations, as we know.
It's certainly going to create what you deem, Alan, as a new reality.
Well, I just want to go back to something here.
Well, that's for sure.
I believe that to be real, Alan. This is what Drake had talked about in Amir Akzel and Probability One, is that now we are on that cusp. Can we survive the technological phase? Can we survive the spiritual phase? Can we get past some of the petty differences that face us, and also some of the natural events, these natural cataclysmic cycles that happen that the conformers are aware of? Can we move forward and make decisions that will protect us, that will allow us that ability to move among the stars, I guess?
Well, also, you know, what we've offered in the past, the previous interview, and what I want to offer now is that, as you say, Alan, a new reality. Now, part of the new reality, if we stabilize our population, they said that they will provide food technology. Now, this has been clarified to us. When we say food technology to feed humanity, we don't mean that they're going to give us like cubes and we're all going to eat it and we can eat forever. Essentially, what they're saying is they'll teach us how to increase the productive yield of free-range chickens, say.
Uh-huh.
Or they'll help us
organically develop safe, insect-resistant grains, that kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
But
right.
they believe, hold on, Clay, they believe that their position is that our food source has to be a healthy food source, which means mm-hmm. free range. Caged chickens are not healthy.
Right, right, right.
Because
right, right.
the stress in the organism itself, the chicken, secretes enzymes that are harmful.
Bioengineered right. foods are not healthy.
Right.
And there's a holistic, if we could use the word, a holistic approach to the health of how we are, how we conduct ourselves, or how we fit within our ecological environment, but it also depends on what we, you know, we are what we put inside ourselves. So there is a truth to that, and
okay.
I think what Sean's driving at.
Also, the healthy food source would, by definition, demand a reduction in population. Because
No, it just all goes along with what you're saying about the conformers, is that they're really interested in the interaction of nature and life forms and ecology in general.
Sure. I mean, if anyone can get a hold of this film, it was done in 1990, called Mind Walk.
Oh, I see that, yeah.
Yes, it's with Liv Ullmann, Sam
right.
Waterston, and John Hurd.
Right.
And it takes place in Mont Saint-Michel.
It's a poet, a politician,
and a
physicist
get together,
right.
and they discuss systems theory. The book is based on a book called The Turning Point, written by Fritz Capra.
Right.
And Bear Capra, his son, did the film.
Right.
That's
okay.
a wonderful idea of systems theory, the examination of that film.
Okay. That everything exists within an ecology, an overriding ecology, and this is... seems like the philosophy of the conformers. I mean, from what you're saying, that's where they like to
go. The philosophy of the conformers, in a concise note, would be that the planet generates food source, and our species must maintain a reasonable population in order for us to enjoy the food source without hurting the planet or ourselves.
Uh-huh. Now,
does
how
that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. We're here to live in harmony with the planet, and for some reason they're fascinated by that, because maybe in their own biological makeup there's something that they've come to terms with. I don't know. I mean, I'm
highly doubtful. This is a silicon-based life form. They're rocks. Although they understand our biology very well.
Uh-huh.
Their relationship to food is very different from ours, if you can even call it food.
Okay.
Just as an anecdote, our guy often says with the conformers, silicon-based rocks, gems, jewel-like, ceramic in their appearance, crystalline in their appearance. So he often jokes, he says, you know, these rocks understand rocks, hence asteroids or comets or whatnot, which would cause an ELE, let's just say. So he often says that these rocks understand rocks. So and he gets a kick out of it, because there's a lot of truth in what he's saying, at least in terms of that particular.
They're actually quite beautiful. You said you'd see, you know, if one were just to stand still, you could put it in the MoMA.
They're actually quite beautiful. They're like silicon crystal type beings that actually shapeshift and move.
Shapeshift, but maintaining the basic quality of what they are, which is rock.
Well,
it's sort of like the Thing from X-Men, in a sense. What was that? What that guy was called?
I've never seen X-Men, but no. Keep this in mind: they're very gem-like, they're jewel. They can shift their shape, but it's still crystalline in structure.
Correct.
It can. For instance, its dimensions would be three by five feet. You know, 3 feet tall. 3 feet tall, 3 feet, let's just say, wide, maybe 2 feet wide and 5 feet tall. But they can change their structure. They can elongate. They can produce these crystalline flake-like appendages that seem to come out as many as they want to be able to perform a task. But we don't know. We suspect, our source suspects that they're very hot, but he doesn't know. He was told by the reptilians during their interactions not to touch the conformers.
But
now, but
yeah.
But
the point being is that, for all we know, our guy could vaporize for different reasons by touching the conformers. I'm just saying, I'm speculating.
But how many conformers are there?
Well, no, but he did put...
Go ahead.
Well, go ahead, Alan.
No, no, I was just wondering how many conformers exist, what's their population size?
We don't know.
Don't know. But he did get close to one and he felt extreme heat.
He did.
Yes. And also, these things are 85% silicon. Okay, and they're 50% carbon.
Some carbon.
This is what our guy got. Now, I don't know if he was told that. You know, I don't know how he came across that information. Maybe they told him, but that's what he originally said to us.
Okay, so just let's sort of recap. So they're going to appear over. I mean, it's up to us, to our governments, local governments, to start the process of disclosure, which means relaying to the general population. We have been contacted by an ET race. Get used to it. Get comfortable with it. They're here and they're coming back and they're going to be over our cities 2017 for sure. It looks like in this moment. And if we are in the program, let's say working on a population, getting more in touch with the earth, they will give us technologies that will start to harmonize ourselves as a species even more, and then prepare us for this ELF event that may happen within the next 10,000
ELE. I think that's, you just summed it up just right. We have to get our population under control for an ELE. As we explained earlier, we have to understand that we're going to have a water shortage problem at some time in the future. Okay, in other words, through the global warming, whether it's celestial and aggravated through the exacerbation of mankind depleting its resources,
overpopulation areas that don't have rain
population. Uh-huh. Also, the fact is that we have to be able to stop the wars, because we look like a planet at war. So I mean, there's a spiritual side to this, and this is some of the things that we have to do. Up until that point of 2017, but it appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, that stabilization of population has to occur by us. Go ahead, John.
Well, I just want to add one thing.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big if. And the reason being is that...
Wait, what's going to be a big if? Say that.
The ability for local governments to tell people the truth. That's a big if.
Okay.
Disclosure process is a big if at this point in time. We talked in the last show about the structure of information, the structure of the ET phenomenon.
Yeah.
We told you and your listeners that the structure resides within corporations and members of corporations that kind of go in between government and transnational leadership, transnational corporate leadership, okay?
Uh-huh.
The disclosure process has to take place. Okay, in order for that day in 2017 to happen without too much dislocation. Agreed?
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
The prospect of disclosure is going to be a very, very tough process, because it's going to take a lot of effort to dislodge 60 years of denial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're not even talking about denial of the average person. Academia is going to be, there's going to be a future shock.
Right.
With academia. Because it's going
to be. Yeah, psychologically, there's an unwillingness to shift out of an old paradigm. You know? So I
right.
know what you mean.
What do we call that, Alan? Temporal provincialism, as they say. But I agree with Sean. To put it in so many words, I got a hard on for academia. Academia has taken the high road, intellectually speaking, and has for many years has completely ignored the subject. Now, not all academicians have done this. This is not fair, but the problem is that they're worried about their pensions and their 401ks. Well, we got rid of that. So
they're also locked in a 3D paradigm. They reject the metaphysical.
Right. I'm writing a book which is talking about how do we create new realities, and of course the ET is, the UFO thing is a big part of it. I'm writing an academic book on the subject, and hopefully we'll bridge.
And the other thing, Clay, I really have to, I have to offer this, okay, before I forget.
Yeah.
They, the conformers, do not want to be gods.
Right.
So there's a great risk that populations on Earth now will embrace these particular beings as gods. That's the last thing they want, and they are not gods.
Right. No, I get that, and I think that's where our spiritual evolution in line with this whole psychological evolution that we will need when we embrace these beings, but or meet these beings. The other question I wanted to ask you guys is, why are you both so passionate about this? I mean, this, you know, you're pretty regular-looking type people, I have to say, and then, you know, you're as close to disclosure as anybody. I mean, what drives you? Why are you so passionate, both of you, about this subject?
For me, it's just, I'm tired, you know, I hope I don't get tired. I'm tired of the bullshit, Alan.
Right.
I'm tired of people lying to each other in their faces. No one gets to the cause anymore. Everything is symptomatic. No one gets to the symptoms. And this is what Sean talked about, mind walk. No one wants to talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the living room, or the big pink elephant, or grandma in her nightgown with one eye and one tooth in her forehead, as LBJ used to say. You don't leave grandma in the living room when the guest comes over. But you know, we gotta leave grandma in the living room. We've got to look up underneath her dress and find the 800-pound gorilla in the pachyderm. So no one wants to acknowledge it, and this is where I get angry with academia. But I think ultimately is that listen, let's get it out on the table, let's get the truth, let's understand we're not alone, and realize is that there's a fantastic future for the human race if we're responsible and we start to own up to what we're capable of.
I think that to dovetail into your mission, Alan, you're interested in a new reality.
Absolutely.
And I know you would not be interested in a new reality that's a false reality.
Well, yeah, of course I'm trying to get to the truth, yeah.
Correct. So it's a new reality that embraces the truth. The truth of the matter is that we are not alone.
Right.
In the universe.
Yeah.
And people need to know that. And
why does it
our guys experience it.
Yeah, go
sorry,
ahead.
Alan?
No, go ahead.
Our guys. Our guys' experience is so fantastic. When Clay and I watch these shows about Roswell, and they're debating whether or not a crash crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, they're debating that. Alan, the phenomena is so far past that.
Right. It's imploding.
That it's maddening that this reality exists, but nobody knows about it. That's what drives me.
Well, we are getting some improvement, what you guys call the giggle factor. I mean, it's not so much ridiculed like it used to. Larry King, CNN, ABC, they're taking it a little more seriously, the phenomenon, but it still is not acceptable in mixed company, let's say, you know?
Right. I mean, there's always reticence when you talk to someone about the ET phenomenon. They're going to look at you and start laughing and pigeon you as a...
why is that? Why is it so... I mean, it's not hard for us to believe. I mean, why is it so difficult to believe for mainstream...
It's really, Alan, it's really a reflection of how little these people know themselves.
Yeah.
When you lash out and you demean someone, it's really a commentary how little you know about yourself.
I have an answer for that.
That's a good point. Yeah, that, yeah, go ahead, Clay. Yeah.
It's that I think that I'll never forget. It's that four brothers in the family. My parents did not shelter us. They explained things to us, whether it was about procreation, whether it was about just the reality, whether about anything to do with life. I remember that we were four young boys. I mean, we went. Our parents brought us into a movie theater. We watched Godfather 1.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents always sheltered us and always explained to us.
Did not shelter us.
Did not shelter us. And explained to us the realities of life. So, on top of that, we had moved quite often during our childhood, so we were exposed to more than one, let's just say one culture, or at least within the American
society, so that we, you know, we had a perspective. So I think that had a great bearing on our perception of life.
I also want to add one more point about the ET phenomenon.
Yeah.
The ET phenomenon is not necessarily per se about ETs. The ET phenomenon is about human beings.
That's
how
fine.
Human beings come to know themselves. That's the most important issue, because this is our planet, this is our reality. Not the ET's reality, it's our reality.
Now, how do we come to know ourselves if we embrace or are open to these other beings?
Because there's a challenge to the existing structure that's denying that. And when you deny an aspect of knowledge, you deny the overall awareness of knowledge. And that affects
us. I like that. You're absolutely right. We cannot deny at least a consideration of these other realities. That's
correct.
My whole foundation.
Absolutely.
And to deny any sort of knowledge is to actually cut off a part of our own potentiality. I see.
Alan, I had an interaction with a gentleman the other day. He's 17 years in the Air Force, and we were talking about very subject. And I brought up, you know, 9/11, whatever. And he said, I don't trouble myself with these conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
And that drives me nuts, Alan. And the reason it does is that there is a huge population of people out there that trouble themselves to come to know events, to examine events. What gives this guy the temerity to turn around and say he can cherry pick his reality? When you cherry pick your reality, there's no examination. It's almost like a crime scene where a cop comes in, he looks at four dead bodies, and decides that it wasn't an inside job because it might embarrass him.
Right. And
Alan, you there?
I'm here. Because this is what we're coming up against, the realities. Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Also, well, I think part of it has to do with narcissism, is that we have a society now that's completely narcissistic. Not everybody, obviously, but it breeds narcissism. So we become, as I said earlier, very provincial in our attitude and sure-footed with what we think we know. And I think that's very dangerous. So,
John Stuart Mill wrote a piece called On Liberty. And the basic premise of On Liberty was that the blessed eccentric has to be embraced. That person that believes in something outside the norm.
Yeah.
When that happens, his knowledge affects the whole, and when it affects the whole is lifted to a higher reality. When you exclude the individual who challenges the norm, you're really holding down or making more dense the entire body of humanity.
That's exactly the reason I call my show New Realities. Because,
well, it's a Cartesian model.
I know there's more out there. I know we don't know what it is, but if we stay open to the possibility that there's more, the whole society will shift to a higher level of awareness.
Right. And, Alan, the biggest hurdle, one of the biggest, I shouldn't say the biggest, but one of the biggest hurdles is the UFO community itself, because people study, say, the grays, and they think that that's all the reality is. Okay?
Right. I don't know.
The universe is manifold. There are so many different ET races out there.
If you can have one, you can have 100. So, I mean, or 1,000. That also depends. But
right.
And so at the end of the day,
Carl Jung had said that the biggest block to knowledge is thinking that we know, you know? So it's like
right.
We really don't know anything.
Right, and the fear is that when ETs show up over cities in 2017, are the scientists going to take over and kick everybody out that has spent the time to understand the metaphysical journey of understanding the ET race all these years? Are they going to kick these people out and thrust upon this new ET reality, their own 3D limitations?
Well, you know, I mean, it's always evolving. The scope of reality, I mean, that window, that little crack on reality, that window is opening wider and wider all the time, and we are about to hit a new threshold, it seems, a greater view. You know, the process of evolution is having greater eyes to see new possibilities.
Well, Clay always says it, you know, put the ships over the cities.
Yeah.
And let people look at them and adapt.
Not for a short period of time, Alan. Has to have a period of time where they go through what we talked about last time, Schopenhauer's elements. And that's very, very important.
From denial to ridicule to acceptance.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we need Noam Chomsky to walk out of his Harvard class and have to look at it, and not ignore it, and then have people ask him about it, and then he has to go do his homework. So, but he has to go through all the elements of being, of rage, of, antipathy, just apathy, anything that would allow him to finally say, hey, you know, I've had my head stuck in the sand for so long, and now I've got to go back and admit it. And it may not be that easy for these guys to do that, but it's going to happen. And
it's great that you guys have done it, because you are in it, and you're presenting this knowledge to the public, and I think it's really important. Is there anything you'd like to say just to sum up these last two shows?
I just want to say one thing, Alan. Okay.
Yeah.
That this is a process. Disclosure is a process. It's going to take time. And since it's going to take time, people have to be patient. Okay, it's going to happen. It's going to take time. People have to be patient. This is not something that's going to happen at, you know, 2:10, all of a sudden everyone's going to know. You know, Clay and I continue to get pressure from people. Oh, we believe that change is going to happen way before 2017. It may not, but it's a process.
So you're saying as the government says, like what would their first step be? They might say, perhaps there's life in outer space or something like that. It's a very frustrating, slow process, but it's going to go for the lowest common denominator, I think is what you're saying, and try to bring the most ignorant, shall we say, person to the level where they could consider the possibility that this is true.
Yeah, it's that ignorance may be in academia, and it may not be the common man.
Right.
So that's the issue.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that academia looks at hopelessly implausible.
Okay. Anything we want to say to just wrap it up, because I think we're running out of time. Any final words?
Clay and I, this is really fantastic material in terms of, you know, this ET contact. We've wrestled with it. It's not without doubt and fear on a certain level about the exotic nature of the information, but we believe this information to be true. And there's been enough steps taken by our guy to convince us without a shadow of a doubt it is a reality this particular person went through.
Yeah, I concur with that.
Okay, well, thank you both so much for really, you know, being so passionate, doing the hard work so the rest of us can benefit from this knowledge. And
well, we're all going to benefit from it, Alan. I do believe that.
Keep doing what you're doing, Alan. It's just as important.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm fascinated by it. You know, I don't accept all of it. I take it, I weigh it, and see, well, I'm open to it for sure. But you know, seeing where does it fit in with my base of knowledge, and how can I expand from what I've heard from you guys? So
fair enough, Alan. But again, I got to remind you, this is a process.
Yeah, it's a process for everyone, though. It's not just a process for the government and for the. It's a process
for
every single conscious being on the planet. It's a process.
Correct. That's right.
And there are some explorers that are a little far ahead of us, saying, "Yep. This is not only possible, this is in my reality." So that's where we're at now, I suppose. So,
right. I mean, humanity had wrestled with the possibility of flight for hundreds of years. Thousands
okay.
of years. But it finally
okay,
happened.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Do you have a website or anything?
No, we don't have a website because we don't want the abuse, Alan.
Okay. I'll give them my website.
Open Mind, Alan, Open Mind Forum. My name, or our name, excuse me, is Temporal. Please, folks, read the threads cover to cover, and that's where you want to know.
And decide for yourself.
Under the
UN. Thanks, guys. I've been talking to Sean and Clay Pickering, top-notch investigators into the disclosure of the UFO realities and what's coming in 2017. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and watch my website, newrealities.com, for the latest.